And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. It is Monday, and that means our weekly mailbag with Ken Rosenthal. I'm Tim McMaster. Just four teams remain in the postseason. We're recording this on Sunday evening before Game 2 of the NLCS, the Braves taking Game 1 of that series from the Dodgers on Austin Riley's walk-off single in the ninth on Saturday night. The ALCS shifts to Boston on Monday. That series tied 1-1. The Red Sox getting even on Saturday, becoming the first team in postseason history with two grand slams in one game. JD Martinez, Rafael Devers with the honors. Ken is covering that series for Fox, so certainly plenty to talk about in that game. I mentioned last week that the mailbag is going to be a little different during the postseason because of Ken's crazy travel schedule. We're taking the top five questions of the week. You can get us your questions the same way as always. We love it when you call them in. 646-543-7072. That's the voicemail line. You can also use email tabaseballshow@gmail.com. If you like the show, rate and review us wherever you listen. That continues to help us out as we try to get the word out about this podcast and keep it growing. So without further ado, here is Ken touching down in Beantown.
Hey, this is Ken. I'm not available right now. Please leave a voicemail. Hey everyone, this is Ken coming to you from Boston on Sunday afternoon. Just landed here from Houston, getting ready for Game 3 of the American League Championship Series on Monday at Fenway Park, and waiting on Sunday for Game 2 of the NLCS to begin. By the time you hear this, that game already will be in the books. In the first two games of the ALCS, we've seen a trend that has taken place in recent years only accelerate. And the trend I'm talking about, of course, is the lack of reliance on starting pitching. I'll accept Nathan Eovaldi from this discussion. He is a traditional starter and a darn good one in the postseason, and he did his thing in Game 2, even with a 41-minute delay after the injury to Houston's Luis Garcia. The inability of starting pitchers to go deep into games so far in this series, again, except for Nathan Eovaldi, it kind of speaks to a craziness that has taken place in recent postseasons. Now, we didn't see it in Game 1 of the NLCS, and I don't expect it to take place at all to that effect in the NLCS. Both teams have legitimate starters, though of course the Dodgers essentially went with a bullpen game in Game 1. And when you have a situation like we do in the ALCS, it makes it very difficult to forecast what might happen day to day. John Smoltz talks often on our Fox broadcasts about how the narrative in a playoff series changes with the outcome of each game. And it is so true. After Game 1 of this series, much like after Game 1 of the American League Division Series between the Red Sox and Rays, you kind of thought, the Red Sox might be in a little bit of trouble. And in each case, the Red Sox have come back to tie the series. Now, what's interesting about the Red Sox, of course, it starts with their manager, Alex Cora. 16-5 in the postseason, and as if that's not impressive enough, 5-0 in the postseason after losses. That is outstanding. And it speaks to just how well prepared the Red Sox are, just the way Cora manages so aggressively and creatively, getting the most out of his team on a given day. So where do we go from here in this series? I have no idea. I have no idea because I don't know what Houston is going to pitch or how they're going to pitch the rest of the way. And that's the biggest concern I have with them right now. Dusty Baker said on Sunday that Luis Garcia would not be removed from the roster because of the right knee discomfort he suffered on Saturday. That's good news for the Astros, but what are they going to get out of Garcia? Not clear. Framber Valdez, he looks like he might have to pitch on 3 days rest in Game 4, and that's never an ideal situation in the postseason. Zach Greinke is a missing person in this series so far. The Astros basically don't know what they're going to get out of him on any given day, so he is a wild card. And then Jake Odorizzi, who was supposed to pitch Game 4, well, probably not going to happen after his effort in Game 2 in relief of Garcia. So as it stands here, the Red Sox actually look like they might be a slight favorite from this point. Why do I say that? They've yet to use Eduardo Rodriguez. They've yet to use Nick Pivetta. These are their length guys. Tanner Houck's pitched a little bit, but him and Whitlock are guys that they will use as well in multi-inning capacities if necessary. And Whitlock, of course, has emerged as a dynamite late-inning option. The Red Sox offense, of course, has been electric as well. We saw that yesterday with the grand slams and back-to-back innings. You haven't seen that in the postseason before. So right now, the Red Sox look decent, but I will give this caveat. The Astros offense, as we know, those top seven hitters, it's as good as it gets in the game. So we will see what happens as this series shifts to Fenway. The atmosphere in the postseason here has been electric. I'm not sure why it's more electric than it's been in maybe, I don't know how many years, but there's a difference. Even a difference, I think, from 2018. I can't measure decibels from year to year. I don't recall exactly, but maybe it's the freedom people have now to go outside again and enjoy baseball, which we didn't have last year. Maybe it's just an excitement about this team, which is kind of an out-of-nowhere story. No one really thought, except perhaps the Red Sox themselves, that the Red Sox would be in this position. Alex Cora has made mention of that. The players have made mention of that. You hear it every year at this time. No one respected us. No one gave us a chance. Well, it's kind of true in the Red Sox case, so I'm not going to get too down on them for that. All that said, let's go to the mailbag. We've got some interesting questions this week, and let's get right to them.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The first question comes from David Eaton, who I presume is a Giants fan. David says, not focusing on the check swing call in Game 5, which is always tough in real time, but the home plate umpiring was pretty poor in the Giants-Dodgers series. How or why does MLB assign a crew of some of the least accurate ball strike umps to a series of this magnitude? David, that's an excellent question. It's one a lot of people are asking, and I would imagine you read Andrew Baggerly's amazing recap of Game 5 in the NLDS in the Athletic after the Giants went out on the check swing. Now, before I get into that, I will say this. Any game that is lost in fans' minds on a specific call or a specific occurrence, it's never like that, right? So many things happen in an individual baseball game. You can never attribute a loss to one thing when there's dozens of things going on. And I learned this lesson actually in 1996, the Jeffrey Mayer game. If you remember, the Yankee fan who reached over the wall in right field in Game 1 of the ALCS between the Yankees and Orioles. I was a columnist at the Baltimore Sun at the time, and that day, the Orioles, I believe if I'm correct, were 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position. So, while little Jeffrey, as he became to be known then, might have given a home run to the Yankees by reaching over the wall to grab Derek Jeter's home run. At the same time, the Orioles could have won the game countless other ways. And the same holds true for the Giants in Game 5. Now, to your question, though, David, and it's a good one. As Andrew Baggerly wrote, the ball strike ratings for some of these umpires, the accuracy ratings, in that series were not good. And the Giants, and perhaps the Dodgers as well, were worried about that going into the series, since both teams, of course, rely on pitching, as all teams do. The only thing I can say is that Major League Baseball rates umpires differently than the ball strike ratings you see that are compiled by people who are, I don't know, on Twitter, online, whatever. They're all good at what they do, but that's just one aspect of umpiring. And the quality of the umpire does come into play when a crew is selected. They do rate them. They do rate them and select them based on that. So I'm not sure exactly what happened here, why those umpires were chosen, other than that they were the ones that Major League Baseball believed were the most qualified for that series. And we can debate that all day long, but that is the way it went down. Next question is from Jason Martinez, also about the Giants-Dodgers series. Jason asks, is this series the catalyst that motivates MLB and the MLBPA, the Players Union, to restructure playoff seeding? I can't help but feel that even though this was an all-time great NLDS, agreed, there might be some execs and fans who are wishing this was the NLCS matchup instead. As a Giants fan, I certainly wish this was an NLCS matchup, regardless of the end result. Am I off base? What are your thoughts? Jason, we've had a number of questions in recent weeks about the playoff format, and my answer has essentially been the same each time. I expect the format to change with the new collective bargaining agreement. So anything I might say about the current format will probably be dated by the time they get a new CBA in place. Now, there is no question that your point is a valid one and one that a lot of people have talked about and thought about. When you have two teams of this quality, and I know it doesn't happen every year when you have a 107-win team and a 106-win team in the same division, but when that happens, and it does happen, obviously it happened once, how can it be resolved where they are playing in the NLCS or the CS instead of the first round? It should happen that way, right? We should not have had this. This should have been the best of seven championship of the National League. They were clearly the two best teams. The way to do it is as Jason suggested. It's to seed at the start of the playoffs, regardless of division standing. It would be based on wins and losses. Now, that would somewhat go against what baseball wants with regard to the sanctity of the division champion. It's always something that's had great value in our sport and that MLB has taken into consideration. But it's interesting. What is happening in the World Series this year? Best record gets home field advantage, right? That's been the rule for a while now. Well, if best record gets home field advantage in the World Series, why can't you seed the first round according to record as well? That would be consistent. Hello. So I get it. The question's a good one. I just don't think we're going to have the same format going forward. I expect expanded playoffs in some form to be part of the next CBA, and I'm hoping that this seeding question is addressed when they come up with that new idea. All right, now from Neil, a British baseball fan living in Australia. Thank you, Neil. Neil says, seeing as the NFL has resumed its games in London this week, I was wondering if the MLB has any plans to raise its profile in Europe. Obviously, there are lots of challenges with suitable stadiums, scheduling, and travel when it comes to games in Europe. Do you know of any plans or potential ideas? Neil, I do know of plans. And in fact, those plans were in place and in progress in 2019 when the Yankees and Red Sox played that two-game series at Wembley Stadium in London. I was there for Fox. I interviewed Rob Manfred, the commissioner, on our broadcast. ESPN had the second game. We had the first. And I said, okay, what happens from here? And Manfred basically said at that time, we do have plans to continue this. And remember, last year, before the shutdown, before the season was played without fans, the plan was to have the Cardinals and Cubs play in London in 2020. Didn't happen. Didn't happen this year for the same reason, but I expect at some point MLB is going to go back to London. I would assume that to be the case. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. They were quite excited with how that turned out. And not just London, but other cities in Europe as well. Perhaps Paris, perhaps Berlin. Who knows where they might go, but Rome would be another possibility given that baseball has some popularity in Italy. I do expect them to want to keep pursuing this avenue. It's just in the best interest of the sport to bring it to as many people as you can. All right, now we get a question from William Fulgham in, well, I don't know if he's in Atlanta, but I'm guessing he's in Atlanta. William's question is, why does no one in the media give the Braves any credit? They match up really well with the Dodgers, better than they did with the Brewers. Now, William sent this question before game one of the NLCS, and it's quite clear the Braves deserve to be there. They won that game, and they deserve to be there even before that. They're quite good. But I'm going to go on a little rant here about fans who want credit for their teams all the time. I hear this all the time on Twitter. If I write about one team, it's why didn't you write about the other? Why do you hate my team? Why don't you write about this team? It never ends. I always have the same response. If I were a fan of a team, and in baseball, I'm not really anymore because it's my job. I'm not. I'm a fan of the sport, but I'm not a fan of any one team. But if I were a fan of a team, and my team was not getting credit from the quote-unquote evil national media, I would feel that much better if my team defied expectations, defied these media cynics, and went on to win a championship. Because guess what? When you win a championship, you get all the credit you deserve. All the credit you want. No one can hold it back from you anymore. So I always kind of flinch at these questions. But as to the specific concern of William about the Braves, why haven't they gotten more credit? Actually, I do think they have gotten quite a bit. Alex Anthopoulos has been praised very much so for his work at the trade deadline, bringing in all those outfielders, Soler and Peterson and Rosario, and of course Richard Rodriguez as well, and not to mention Adam Duvall. I missed him. So yes, they've gotten credit for that. They've gotten credit for a remarkable season in which they played a good amount without Ronald Acuna Jr. and Marcell Ozuna. Marcell Ozuna, of course, under investigation for a domestic violence incident. And others as well. Mike Soroka never surfaced this year because of the Achilles issue. And these were people, players, who were supposed to be key parts of what they were going to do. They weren't there for them. And ultimately, the Braves patched around that and went on to an amazing division championship. So, in my view, they get credit, they deserve credit, and for fans out there looking for more credit, blaming the media for the East Coast, West Coast bias, whatever you want to say on a particular day, I say, save it. You'll get all the credit you want and all the satisfaction you want when your team wins. All right. Finally, last question, also a good one. This comes from Joe. And he asks, what would compensation from the Mets for David Stern, the Brewers general manager, look like? Well, first of all, Joe, I don't believe this is going to be an issue. It sure doesn't sound like the Brewers are going to grant permission. Stearns has at least 1 year left on his contract and maybe more. Andy Martino of SNY, the Mets broadcast outlet, reported on Sunday that there might be an option year in there as well, a vesting option. So the Brewers do not have to grant permission for Stearns to go, and I don't actually expect that they will. But your question still is a good one, because if they are going to grant permission, and let's assume that for the sake of the discussion, they're going to want something back if the Mets indeed would hire Stearns. And we've had this surface a few times in, I don't know, the past decade. I'm probably going to miss one of them, but I remember two. The two I remember, the first of them, was when Theo Epstein went from the Red Sox to the Cubs. If you recall, there was a compensation trade arranged, and it was a pitcher named Chris Carpenter, not that Chris Carpenter, and another one named Aaron Kurtz. They went to Boston, and Jer Bogaerts, Xander's younger brother, he went to the Cubs. It was a two-for-one trade. The Red Sox got the two guys, the pitchers, and the Cubs got Bogaerts. None of these guys ever became really anything. Carpenter pitched 8 games for Boston in 2012, never heard from again. Kurtz never made it to the majors. Bogaerts never even got out of the Dominican Summer League. So it was a trade of little consequence. There was a trade of greater consequence, same type of thing, interestingly enough, for an executive who is not as highly regarded as Theo Epstein, not even in the same stratosphere, though he's certainly highly respected, and that's Jim Benedict. Back in 2015, the Marlins hired him away from the Pirates. And after that, there was a trade announced in which Trevor Williams went from the Marlins to the Pirates for basically a non-prospect named Richard Mitchell. And at the time, the trade was perceived as quite one-sided. And in came out, I don't know, maybe a week or two later, maybe even longer than that, that actually that trade was the compensation for the Marlins losing Benedict. In fact, my colleague and our great podcast host, Jason Stark, then working for ESPN, was the first to report this. Jason reported this was not a trade in a traditional sense. This was the compensation for Benedict. And in that case, Trevor Williams was pretty highly regarded at the time, became a pretty useful pitcher for the Pirates, still pitching, and that's 6 years ago. So, yes, these compensation packages sometimes do come to fruition, and sometimes they produce a decent result. One other people might be wondering about, Andrew Friedman, when he went from Tampa Bay to the Dodgers. Different scenario. There was no compensation. Then Friedman's contract was up. The Dodgers simply hired him. Actually, Friedman worked without a contract in Tampa Bay. It was just a year-to-year kind of thing, and I'm not sure that's how they still do it. In fact, it's not. They just hired or extended Eric Neander, and when you extend someone, you're giving them a contract. So that is how that went down. All right, I want to thank everyone for their questions. We will talk to you next week from parts unknown. We'll have to see where we are next week. We'll probably be getting ready for the World Series, but who knows exactly where we'll be broadcasting and podcasting from in the near future.
That'll do it for this week's 5 Questions with Ken Rosenthal. Thank you so much for checking out the show. If you want your questions answered next week, it's easy. The phone number, 646-543-7072. You can also email us, tabaseballshow@gmail.com. Stay with the Athletic Baseball Show all week long. Starkville coming up on Tuesday. Jason and Doug will be joined by Brian Anderson. He has the call of that National League Championship Series. On Wednesday, Andy McCullough continues his check-in on the Athletics beat writers who are covering the playoff teams. Thursday, Baseball Barista with Grant Brisby and Hunter Pence. And then on Friday, it's always Keith Law and Derek Van Riper. 5 days of content per week through October and the postseason. Also, for actual daily game reaction, we have you covered there as well on the Rates and Barrels feed. Check that one out wherever you get your podcast. DVR, joined by Eno Saris and Britt Ciroli. They're going Monday through Friday, recapping the previous night's game, so check that one out as well. If you want to read all the great work for the great writers of The Athletic, you can join for 50% off right now. Go to theathletic.com/baseballshow. We'll talk to you again next week.